Welcome to the Holistic Health Podcast, beautiful humans. If a professional, polished, well-edited podcast is what you're after, then move right on.
If, however, you love unfiltered banter, unedited bloopers, authentic heart sharing, and a very generous dash of holistic health education, then you're in the right place.
Hello, beautiful friends. Welcome back to the Holistic Health Podcast. I was going to say Holistic Health Podcaster because at the same time I was checking that my mic was coming out of the right microphone, and it's called a podcaster. So welcome back to the Holistic Health Podcaster, friends. Oh my gosh, wild. How are you today?
I'm so good, honey. How are you going?
I'm good. We had, I was just saying before we jumped back online that I've been roughing it without steady internet for about a week or so, which is such a first world problem. But I'm just realizing how much easier business and life is when the internet connection is very stable. Touch wood, like I've not had many issues in my time with bad internet, but it was just from all the storms up on the Gold Coast that our modem blew up. And then, of course, that, you know, affects a lot of people, and you just kind of got to wait your turn. So yes, we are all good, feeling very grateful of that very simple thing being fixed, and really excited to continue our conversations around fertility, and this week really speaking to it as it relates to PCOS. So before we dive into the nitty gritty of it, what I just wanted to share is that in this episode, we're really going to be covering PCOS as it relates to fertility, but we will also start off with just busting a few myths once we just set the foundations, because, you know, Amy and I were having a chat before we hit record around just how many misconceptions there are around polycystic ovarian syndrome or PCOS that, you know, aren't necessarily without harm. They actually can lead people down the complete wrong track or create unnecessary anxiety where it doesn't need to exist. So if you are someone who has PCOS, you suspect you have PCOS, or you have someone in your world that is sitting in this boat, please make sure that you do share this episode with them, because I think it's really important that we have reliable, accurate information in people's ear holes and not just stuff that is outdated or makes absolutely no sense. So with that in mind, do you want to just give people a little bit of a PCOS 101 reminder of what this condition is? Because even in that, it might bust a few myths.
Yeah, I think this is an important one. In fact, I had a conversation with a client about this just this week. I spotted something on her blood, slightly elevated androgens, suppressed SHBG, and said, oh, have you got a history of PCOS? And she said, oh, I got scanned for cysts ages ago and they all looked normal. And I think it's probably time that this condition was updated, like got renamed, because the marketing department fucked it up, friends. So even though it is referred to as polycystic ovarian syndrome, it is actually got very little to do with the cyst part and the results of what can happen when there is, you know, abnormal follicle development. So it's a, I guess if I was to summarize it in a single sentence, it's a condition of excess androgens or excessive male hormones. You know, sometimes it's testosterone, sometimes it's androstenedione. And basically it's a, not a single disease, but there's really three types of native PCOS that you can have. You can also get it coming off the pill, which is, I guess, a fourth type, but it's characterized by elevated androgens or male hormones in the female body where other causes of androgen excess have been ruled out. So one of the key things about it is you've got to find the root cause. And as someone who's had PCOS, I went through this back in my teens and early 20s, and with that, you're really looking to, yeah, address the root cause, but identify that this is indeed what you have. And unfortunately, you know, diagnostic criteria as far as, you know, an ultrasound goes or the cysts on your ovaries. It really has very little to do with this condition, if anything at all, and more to do with those blood markers that are out of range.
Yes, hear, hear. It's just such a shit name, isn't yeah. it? And I think it also creates a lot of confusion when people do have ultrasounds and there are cysts there. There are lots of different kinds of cysts, some normal, some not, some to do with polycystic ovaries, some actually not to do with polycystic ovaries. So I think this is where it really pays to make sure that even if you have been diagnosed with it in the past, if you're not sure how it was diagnosed, or if you only feel like it was diagnosed based on ultrasound, it's time to revisit that diagnosis because it may or may not actually have been accurate, or it may or may not still be relevant. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I think that's super important. So I guess let's dive into some extra myths. I thought we would just pick three because otherwise we might be here all day, and I really want to make sure we cover everything that we have intended to in today's episode. The first one I just want to myth bust is that PCOS equals infertility. So I know of clients and also of close friends who were told when they were really quite young that they had PCOS and it meant that they were going to find it really difficult to fall pregnant, and they actually may just require IVF or assisted reproductive technology to help them. And that is so wrong for so many reasons. I actually could think of at least 3 to 5 people in my close network where they've had that belief instilled in them, and then they've been really slack with contraception and actually fallen pregnant unintentionally. And I also know many clients where they've then onboarded this belief that it's going to be really hard. And I think that's harmful, actually. So while PCOS can and does influence fertility in the way of it influencing hormones and other metabolic factors, it is not a diagnosis of infertility. So that's just really important to remember. And for the large majority of people, outside of when it's a very strongly genetic PCOS type presentation, it's very reversible and it's very manageable. And even in people where it is very strongly genetically it's very rooted in a genetic predisposition, it still is able to be managed. You might just you might need to use more tools in the toolkit than someone where it's not as strongly genetically influenced and it is more lifestyle or other factor related. So please, if anyone has onboarded the belief that because they have PCOS, they're absolutely going to really struggle to conceive, you can just leave that at the door because it's not true. The other one I just wanted to clarify, because again, it's something that comes up a lot in consultations with clients when I'm first just listening to their story and hearing how they're describing their PCOS and their experience and what they know about it as well. And that is that PCOS is a high estrogen condition. So PCOS can present with a whole spectrum of estrogen states. And this is supported by the research too, FYI, not just my clinical observations. And part of the reason is because there are opposing mechanisms that would lead to either an increase or a decrease in estrogen as it relates to PCOS. So as an example, there is an enzyme in our body called aromatase, and we've probably spoken about it on the podcast before. If we haven't, don't worry. All it is an enzyme that basically one of its jobs is to convert androgens, so quote unquote male dominant sex hormones, to estrogens. And in some research, it shows that there is a decreased expression of this enzyme in women with PCOS, which means higher androgens and lower estrogen. However, there is some other evidence that suggests that there's actually a hypersensitivity to FSH, which comes from our brain and feeds back to our ovaries what to do. And this leads to more aromatase activity, which equally, which equals higher levels of estrogen. And then, if you're still with me here, we're almost there. Further to that point, we know that women who present with PCOS that's also associated with having excess body fat, what we know about body fat is that, or excessive amounts of body fat, is that it increases aromatase activity, which can also lead to higher estrogen. And likewise, you know, another way that this can play out or another influence is that many women with PCOS have a lower amount of something called sex hormone binding globulin, which are basically like SHBG for short. So they're basically like little taxis that carry your hormones, including estrogen, around the body. And when there aren't as many taxis available or seats for those hormones, including estrogen, to sit in, it means that there's more estrogen or passengers out on the street in or and like having an effect in the body. And then finally, in opposition to all of that, you know, there's, and you can kind of see why we're saying that PCOS can present with a spectrum of estrogen levels. There are some women where, that because they have elevated prolactin, they actually may have some differences to their estrogens from that perspective as well. So if you're confused, then that's very understandable. And this is, I guess, highlighting why it's so important to have an accurate diagnosis and to understand what testing is actually helpful in unpacking what might be going on in your body, and also why that then would influence some of the finer details or the nuances of how you might need to move forward with your own treatment. So that was a big myth to bust. Maybe the next one will be a little bit simpler. So what one do you have to share with us?
The other one that I wanted to just pop into everyone's ear holes is that there's a very common belief that PCOS is a cause of painful periods. I hear it a lot from clients. I've heard it just in lady business conversations. I'm sure I've heard, you know, friends refer to it also. And this actually isn't true. Now, it is true that you can have PCOS and also have painful periods. But the issue with this misconception is a lot of women who experience painful periods who've got PCOS just go, oh, it's because I've got PCOS, and don't realize that actually there's an independent driver for the pain that has nothing to do with PCOS. And our frustration with this misconception is for women with PCOS, they're like, oh, well, I just have to live with it. First of all, they often think they have to live with having PCOS when it's entirely manageable and most commonly entirely reversible. And also, if you're just chalking up your cyclic discomfort to PCOS, you then stop hunting for the real cause and the underlying cause and actually doing something about that. Now, this conversation we're having today is, of course, in the context of fertility, and whatever's driving the painful periods is almost certainly going to influence your fertility. But even if you have zero plans of ever having children, whatever underlying structural or metabolic or functional things that are contributing to that menstrual pain or dysmenorrhea, it's not your PCOS, and you should be having that thoroughly investigated and then a treatment plan put together for that. So this is, yeah, just us lovingly telling you that if you have PCOS and painful periods and you just think the pain's from your PCOS, that actually isn't the truth. And there's still some investigation to do to get to the underlying piece of the puzzle. And certainly for me, I had PCOS and endo. And those two things, of course, affect the female reproductive system. Those two things require a particular approach. And you can absolutely address both of those things with the right strategies.
Hear, hear. And okay, so let's shuffle a little bit further along and speak to some of the fertility, extra fertility things. So I think what we wanted to share here is just to cover off three key ways that PCOS can impact fertility, and just circling back to that reminder that there's many tools in the toolkit that you can use to mitigate some of these influences or address them. So this is not to scare you or to make you feel helpless. It's more just to inform you. So one of the biggest ways that it can and does influence fertility is the fact that in PCOS, one of the features of that condition is having irregular ovulation or anovulation. So basically what that means is some months you're ovulating, some months you're not, or that ovulation is very unpredictable. Mm. And as a first and foremost start of that, if you're not ovulating, you can't fall pregnant. So that's one thing, because ovulation is what releases the egg that is allowed to be fertilized to begin the process of creating a little human, and then producing progesterone after ovulation is also what allows that to continue to grow and form into a healthy and sustained pregnancy. So that's one problem. Another very pragmatic, practical problem of that is if you are ovulating, but ovulating very infrequently, for some women, it can be difficult for them to understand when to time intercourse. Absolutely not something that's not overcomable, because there are many signs your body tells you and sends you that tell you that ovulation is, around the corner, and then ways to confirm that it has actually happened. But just speaking to, I guess, that can be a challenge for some people, particularly if you're not used to or you're not aware of how to read your body in that way. And I think that's, I might actually just leave it there, because that's probably the main thing when it comes to irregular ovulation or anovulatory cycles. And I think if I go any further, I'll probably feed into what you're about to talk to. So I might just handball it back to you to speak to the next kind of way that PCOS can impact fertility.
So as an extension of what you just introduced there, we have to really consider the influence of the way PCOS affects our cycles and the impact that that has on egg quality. So there is a sweet spot in an ideal menstrual cycle in which the egg reaches optimal development, and that's between day 12 and day 17 of your cycle. Now, if you are ovulating prior to day 12, which is unlikely in PCOS, but after day 17 is very, very common, because we normally see longer cycles, the egg is, to put it really crudely, undercooked or overcooked. And what that means is there is an issue with the egg quality, and we know statistically the increased risk of birth defects and miscarriage just go through the roof. And so what's happening with PCOS, typically with those longer cycles, is the egg is not developing at the correct rate, and ultimately the quality of it deteriorates. And by the time ovulation occurs, it's far too late in the cycle. And this has an influence, obviously, first of all, whether or not it can be fertilized, but in the event it can be fertilized, that the likelihood of there being an issue there, whether it's a pregnancy loss or some sort of birth defect, is very, very high. And further to that, because of the dysfunctional development of the follicles and therefore the unhealthy timing of ovulation, the quality of the corpus luteum that gets left behind, or the what's left of where the egg popped out, which is responsible for driving progesterone, also doesn't function as well. And we don't typically see amazing progesterone levels either, which are, of course, really important for our own well-being, but also the ability to get pregnant and remain pregnant. And so, whenever we're treating someone with PCOS, you've obviously got to identify what type of PCOS they have, work on a strategy that addresses the underlying variables. But as part of that, whether or not you're planning to get pregnant or not, is to bring ovulation back into that window where follicle development is appropriate and therefore the quality of the egg is absolutely ideal. Now, I will say there are, of course, exceptions to the rule. There are women who have, you know, ovulated outside of that window, fallen pregnant and gone on to have a baby. And so don't freak out if this is in, you know, you're in this category. However, statistically speaking, you know, the more you improve your cycle and bring your hormones back into balance and correct the underlying metabolic dysfunctions that are going on, you're stacking the odds in your favor and shrinking the runway or the length of time it's going to take for you to be able to bring a human into the world. Now, again, this conversation's very much centered around the fertility space. But what I will also say about that is, again, if you're not planning to ever have children, or even if that's a long way away for you yet, this issue with delayed ovulation and poor egg quality is an issue you should really be putting on the table to resolve now, because that quality of the corpus luteum and therefore the progesterone production that you have influences every single facet of your life, every single cell in your body and the way it feels, how you feel on a day-to-day basis. And so it still remains the template with which to aim for, regardless of whether, you know, pregnancy and creating a new little human is, you know, on your radar right now or somewhere down the track, you know, a few years away.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, I guess, moving on to the third influence that we are going to share, this one relates a little bit more to the interplay between PCOS and thyroid presentations or thyroid conditions. So we have spoken about thyroid health as it relates to fertility and pregnancy before on the podcast. That basically you need adequate thyroid hormones to achieve and maintain a healthy pregnancy. And having suboptimal thyroid function does increase the rates of pregnancy loss, statistically speaking. And we know from the research that women with PCOS on average have a higher TSH, which is not a good thing in the context of fertility, and lower T3, which is one of your thyroid hormones. And they also have higher rates of thyroid antibodies. So to put a numerical value on that, in some of the research, it shows that about 23% of PCOS women have elevated TPO antibodies, which are a form of thyroid antibodies, compared to 8% in, I guess, the control, so people without PCOS. So that's quite a big difference between the two. And there's also lots of reasons why this might happen. For example, like insulin resistance, inflammation, higher BMI, elevated prolactin. And it's really about addressing things at their root cause, because as we've spoken to already in just sharing about PCOS, is that, you know, it's a syndrome. So it's a collection of things that are a little bit out of balance that then manifest or start to infiltrate and impact other areas in the body and cause those to go out of balance. So whenever we're treating hormonal or fertility type cases, it's so important that everything is addressed holistically and that the foundations of good hormone health and management of these types of presentations is not underplayed or understated, because I think sometimes we can be too quick to go to the absolute, like, fanciest out there thing that we can think of, when really nailing the foundations is so, so important. And I would say in PCOS, bloody effective, right? Like, it's just one of those conditions where there's actually so much you can do that's really within your control, and a fair chunk of it free in terms of treatment, that just makes such a big difference. And then, of course, there are extra bells and whistles and tools in the toolkit that can help refine that for anyone that's needing that. But it's more just to remind you of how much power you have over this if you are currently experiencing PCOS.
I love that you said that. And I feel like you can almost say that about any condition. I find that people are often surprised, you know, I speak to clients about, you know, the basics of health, whatever condition they've got going on, that once you get those foundations in place, so much can just drop away anyway. And of course, you know, if you are working with a practitioner who is trained in this area, there are so many fancy bells and whistles that we can also pull out of our back pocket and layer on top of getting those foundations right. But speaking of getting foundations right, if you are in the PCOS camp club, I've quit, by the way. And if you'd like to quit, yeah. And if you'd like to quit too, Nat has got something really amazing for you that she's put together that is going to, and well, I better let you explain it, Nat, but this is for you ladies. If you have had a diagnosis of PCOS or you suspect it and you're currently going through the process of working out exactly what it is or what type you have, what is it that you've put together, Nat?
Magic. No, it's not magic. As we've spoken to, there is so much power in A, understanding how to get an accurate diagnosis, and then B, like mastering the foundations. And it's something that is incredibly common. And I'm really mindful that not everyone wants to or needs to go down the path of one-to-one support, or it just might feel more accessible to start with something lower hanging and affordable and then work your way to one-to-one support if you need it. So I guess my goal with creating this guide, which is called the PCOS Wellness Blueprint, a holistic guide to thriving with PCOS, was to fill that gap and to make sure no one's missed and that there is a source, like I can feel good about there being a source of accurate expert information that I feel confident in people using and following, rather than just being in an absolute sea of myths, scare tactics, overwhelming amounts of supplements and just confusion that I feel like happens a lot in this space. So basically within the guide there, I cover a whole different range of things. So I cover getting an accurate diagnosis and understanding your PCOS type. So you might have heard Amy speak to a few times there, you know, what's your type? And that's not an official term that the doctors are going to be on board with. That is, I guess, more, you can read about it. I'll keep moving on. So the other thing that I go through are PCOS blood test recommendations. So what to test, when to test it, and, you know, like what to arm yourself with as far as knowledge goes when it comes to hormonal testing. I also speak to the best dietary, lifestyle, and supplemental interventions to help you move forward depending on the type of PCOS that you have. There's also some bonus tips on constructing a healthy balanced plate, getting enough protein and what that actually looks like. There's a bonus 5 days of high protein PCOS friendly breakfast ideas to kind of get you started. I find that most people, breakfast is the thing they struggle with the most. I speak about bloody carbohydrates and PCOS because it's one of the most confusing, misunderstood things out there. I also share an insight into my clinical naturopathic toolkit for PCOS management. So kind of lifting the hood on a lot of the extended supplements that I may use with my PCOS patients and giving you And I guess a look into some of the evidence based guidelines around dosage ranges or things that I might use in my clinical practice as well. And then I also speak to movement and exercise as it relates to the PCOS type that you're trying to reverse or manage. There's tips on additional lifestyle interventions that are supportive of improving your unique hormonal landscape. And there's also a roadmap. So sometimes I find with these kind of guides and information, it can be like, awesome, this is all here. But then you get to the end of it and you're like, oh shit, like now how do I actually do the thing and the steps? Because this is a lot. So what I tried to do with this guide was also give you a little bit of like a roadmap to help you strategically implement the recommendations within the guide, minus the overwhelm. And I also included a couple of just bonus templates to allow you to like plan your weekly meals, and also a little journal reflective template that I think is really helpful whenever you're trying to implement change and celebrate your wins, look at where you might be able to need to focus your attention next. So it's incredibly affordable. It's available on my website. You can purchase it at any time. And I will also have a link to it in the show notes. And of course, if you're actually at a stage where either you're not sure if you need one-to-one support or that or this guide or both, you're welcome to reach out and send me a DM. Or on the flip side of that, if you've listened to this episode and you're like, I absolutely need some one-to-one consultation support, then both Amy or myself are available to support you on all things PCOS and or fertility. So just jump on over to either of our websites or into our DMs, and you'll be able to be directed to get some extra love for your 2024 journey.
Oh, Nat, do you know 16-year-old me that was struggling with acne and all of my hormonal stuff is just crying with happiness that something like this guide exists in the world now. Like, I wish there had been something like that back then. And, you know, it was mid-90s. So it was, you know, dating myself a little bit there. But look, you know, for me, I ran off to the doctor and got on, you know, an anti-androgenic pill immediately to try and sort out my skin, and then realized when I started studying naturopathy, it wasn't the answer, and got to work to sort it out. But it was very much back then, you know, more of a pioneering space, and the options were so limited. And, you know, we're lucky now that in this day and age, we understand so much more, and that you've put it together so beautifully with everything a girl could want who is battling with androgen excess. So yeah, if this is you, friends, I would encourage you to check that out, because it has got absolutely everything you need to learn in it about how to begin taking more specific and strategic care of yourself and your hormones. And like Nat said, if in the end you need some fancy bells and whistles, well, then we're here for you.
Absolutely. Thank you. And I would have loved to have met 16-year-old Amy. I feel like we would have been good friends, just as we are now. I feel like 16-year-old Amy comes out when we do karaoke. So,
oh yes,
I love that for us. I look forward to it every year when we do that.
I should invite her out more often, hey?
Absolutely. That's one of my intentions for 2024, is to invite your inner diva out every
You might regret this, Nat, but okay.
I might, but I don't reckon I will. The playful Leo in me is like, bring it. I love it. All right, friends. Well, we hope you have enjoyed this episode. Please share it with a friend if you have, or if you feel it would benefit them. We just love to get all of this information as much out there as we can, knowing how helpful it can be. And we'll be back with you next week.
See you guys then. Bye.
You've been listening to the Holistic Health Podcast with Amy and Nat.
If you loved this episode, then make sure you share it on Instagram and give us a tag.
If you'd like to help us spread the holistic health message far and wide, then we would also so appreciate it if you left a rating and review. This helps us more than you know.
And don't forget to come and say hi over on Instagram. See you next week.